Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The medicines bill for the state is increasing rapidly. This year, it will exceed 3.4 billion euro, and with a range of new high-tech treatments available, patients are understandably seeking to take advantage of these new and innovative medicines. Well, a new range of weight loss medication is also offering what looks to all intents and purposes like a miracle cure for obesity. But the question is, are all these new drugs resulting in good value for money for the taxpayer? Well, Professor Michael Barry is the clinical director of the National Centre for Pharmacoeconomics, and he's here with me in the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Claire.
Good to have you with us. So let's talk about the weight loss drugs first. So people will know the brand name Ozempic, the other iterations of weight loss medication used for the treatment of diabetes and off licence for weight loss, if prescribed. Can I ask you what your view is on that off licence use of the drug?
Well, we would prefer that it was used according to its licence, and I would make the point that we already have a licensed medication, which is liraglutide, again, a GLP-1. Its trade name is Saxenda. That's already available for use for the treatment of weight management. And that's been available since the 1st of January 2023. And we do know, of course, that there are going to be many more additions. Certainly, Wegovy, which is, again, semaglutide at 2.4 milligrams. And we have tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro. Now, this is the one that we're really looking at because this has been shown in, say, in the Surmount trial, where you can get weight loss of up to maybe 3.5 stones, which would be something like 23 kgs.
Right. So this is the one they call the King Kong of weight loss medication.
Well,
So you're going to have the knock on the door now, many knocks on the door asking if the state can fund this for people.
Yeah, there's no question this is going to be a challenge. I have to say it's in process at the moment, and we have looked at it in a rapid review, and it's going for a full health technology assessment. Now, that's going to be really interesting, because what you do there is you take all the benefits, all the costs, and then you determine whether it's actually value for money or not. So We've seen with say semaglutide or Wegovy that there are benefits not only just in weight loss but also cardiovascular outcomes, etc. And that's very important. The question is, when you take all of this into consideration, will it be value for money or not? Now, if it is, it's still going to provide a big challenge to the HSE, because you know, this could cost anything up to 100 million euro a year. But if it's not cost effective, then it will mean price negotiations. And that's what usually happens in across all areas.
But that 100 million euro a year, that has to be balanced against what it might save the state. And we know that obesity is costing the state how much per annum?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the cost effectiveness assessment comes in. And it's up to the manufacturer to demonstrate to the HSE that this is value for money. And if they do, well, that's fair enough. And then you have to decide how you're going to pay for it, if you're going to pay for it. There was a really interesting article published in The Lancet about 2 months ago, looking at high-income countries and the availability of weight loss drugs. And it might surprise people to think that there are a number of countries that do not fund the weight loss drugs. And I'm thinking in terms of, say, Australia, Germany, Italy, Denmark, Finland. They don't. And there are a few that do, obviously, including ourselves.
Right. And what's the logic behind that then? What are you taking from that?
Well, the discussion in the paper was equity and, I tend to favour the making of these drugs available, but not everybody will get access to them. Mm-hmm. And made available on the basis of clinical need. And that, because if you're making available to everybody, you simply would not be able to afford them. Mm-hmm. It would take up the entire drugs budget. What will happen is that you will have criteria which will need to be satisfied before the state will reimburse the drug, just like we have for Saxenda at the moment.
So this is the one that is licensed, and you're dealing with the applications in your office. So
we
what's the demand?
The demand is very high, Claire. I mean, you know, it was initially suggested that maybe you'd get 100 applications in the first year or whatever. Since the 1st of January 2023, we've assessed over 14,000 applications. It's very labour intensive. My colleagues in the Medicines Management Programme spent a lot of time working on this. But there are criteria that must be met. So, for example, the BMI has to be over 35. You have to have pre-diabetes and you have to have either high blood pressure or high cholesterol. And then there's a second phase. So you'll get reimbursed for maybe about 6 months. And then you have to prove that it's working. So if you lose weight, if you get a weight loss of over 5%, will you continue to reimburse it?
For how long?
Well, that's a very good question. At the moment, it's 2 years. It's likely to be longer. But I think all this landscape is going to change when Mounjaro comes along and then we'll have to reassess this.
Right. So that is the big challenge then, the Mounjaro when this...
I think it is. For me, I think this is going to be the biggest challenge in the medicines area, bar none.
Right. Because I also want to talk to you about cancer medication, because things are changing rapidly on that front as well. So if we have a cancer drug which is approved by the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, and is not immediately made available to patients, people start to ask questions. Can you explain why that happens?
I can. There are a few things. One is the clinical evidence, and the other are the timelines that are associated with getting access to cancer drugs. We spend about 500 million on cancer drugs each year. It might surprise people to, and we've known this for some time from the literature, that many cancer drugs that are approved by the EMA do not have survival benefits and do not improve quality of life. Now, that's an issue. When it comes to, because they are very...
So on what grounds are they approving them then?
They're approving them on maybe surrogate markers, markers that may be linked to improvement. They may be approving them in terms of reducing disease progression. But you don't have the evidence as yet that they will improve overall survival.
Mm-hmm.
So what that does is it puts the onus on the manufacturer to try and demonstrate value for money. But if you're not improving overall survival and you're not improving quality of life, now this isn't for every cancer drug, but for some, then it's very difficult to prove that it's value for money. And we have an old saying in this game, if it's not clinically effective, it can't be cost effective. So I think that's the challenge. And I think the concept of you know, making drugs available when they're approved by the EMA, I think there are a number of problems with it, but there's a big financial problem to it, and I'll tell you why. At the moment, for cancer drugs, and for indeed for all drugs, we assess the value for money proposition. Now, if you took, and I watched this closely, but if you took all the cancer drugs that we've approved in this country this year up to August, the end of August, the 5-year budget impact would be €391 million. Now, the process itself, the evaluating the efficacy and then the subsequent price negotiations reduce that by 132 million. That's the value of the process. But it's also the value or the pay that you will have to make if you're going to reimburse these drugs up front. Straight away.
Right, so you can't move quickly, you say. You just, given the budgetary constraints.
There are budgetary constraints. They have to prove value for money. It's taxpayers' money we're paying spending at the end of the day, and you have to make sure you're getting value for it. And in regards to the timelines, and this is another very important component, and we hear this a lot, and it's the implication is it takes 2 years to get access to cancer drugs in this country, and it's the fault of the system. Well, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, because there are a number of time delays that are, you know, they're not in the gift of the HSE. We've no power over those. For example, the time from marketing authorization to the time a company asks for a price in this country can vary. And in fact, for cancer drugs, on average, it's about 9 months. We've no control over that.
That's the company. That's the manufacturer.
That's the manufacturer. Then there's another delay. When it's decided that a full health technology assessment is required, which is very reasonable, they're very high cost drugs, then the time it takes the company to submit the evidence is another 7 or 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying here is that, you know, it's very simplistic to say it takes 2 years, but we really have to look at where those delays are coming. And the majority of those delays are coming from the manufacturer.
And is it the case that the manufacturers are then concentrating on the very big markets as well? That we're quite far down the food chain.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is about money. And anyone who pretends otherwise, you know. So where would you go? You go to the big markets because that's where you make your money. And that's the reality of things.
Yeah, the other development I wanted to talk to you about in terms of cancer treatment, because we've heard from geneticists on this programme about this new and really specific type of cancers that are being treated now and the way they're being treated. So we mightn't be treating lung cancer per se in future. We'll be treating a very specific cancer with an individual code. Now, what does that mean in terms of cost?
Yeah, these are the NTRK inhibitors, and larotrectinib was the first example of this. And we reimburse that drug. It is made available in this country. But I think when you look at the challenge in this, this drug is very expensive. So at the asking price, it's about €570,000. It wasn't cost effective. And it had a budget impact of around €30 million. So again, you see the challenges. So there was a really good article in the New England Journal by Dan Longo, who wrote about personalized, promising and problematic. Promising because of the therapeutic innovation, problematic in how are you going to pay for it. In relation to this drug, we have put it under a managed access, like other areas where a clinician will have to come in, provide us with clinical details, and then we decide whether it matches up to the agreed criteria. If it does, we'll recommend reimbursement. If it doesn't, we'll recommend it shouldn't be reimbursed. And I think, Claire, this is a really interesting thing, because the days when you can put pen to paper and write a prescription costing €500,000 are coming to an end, and rightly so.
It puts a huge burden on the clinician, though, doesn't it? To have the time and the scope to come in for an individual case.
Well, you're talking about drugs that are €500,000.
No, plus, I do. I understand that.
I suppose I'm
worried about the pressure it puts not only on the clinician but also on the patient. You know, the patient has to make a case. The clinician has to make a case. Then they have to go to you.
Yeah.
And argue it out.
Yeah.
And you think that's the right way to do it because of the high cost?
I do, and I'll tell you why. The fundamental reason you do any of this is the so-called opportunity cost. So if you make a decision to spend €500,000 or €1 million on a particular drug, we have a finite healthcare budget. So somebody else is going to lose out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's about resource allocation. Yeah. And you've got to have some process.
I suppose the problem is going to come down the line when we have more of this individualized medicine. And do we have a plan to deal with that situation?
Yes, I think at the moment, what we're doing is trying to ensure that the appropriate patients get access to the appropriate treatment. And yes, you're right, there will be financial implications for all of this. But I think at the moment we're managing reasonably well. I know a lot of, you can't keep everyone happy with the situation, but I think we're managing to do that as best we can. It's very labour intensive, as I was saying, to ensure that we run these. But a real challenge.
All right, Michael, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. That's Professor Michael Barry from the Centre for Pharmacoeconomics. We'll take a break. Maurie Staunton, gardening expert, will be here after this.
51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.